The content of this program is intended for people who are print and visually impaired. Hello, my name is Joe Austin, and I'm your host for today's episode of Legal Matters, an original program produced in the North Carolina Reading Service studio. For the next half hour, we'll be talking about your legal rights and how to access full participation in our community and achieve your goals of independent living. Every fourth Tuesday of each month, you can find us here providing news and information from federal and state agencies, as well as from nonprofit organizations that promote information on laws supporting independent living. In today's episode, we'll be talking about wage and hour laws with my good friend and brother at the bar, Will Oden. Will, welcome.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're so glad to have you. And Will's been on the program before, and Will and I used to practice with the same firm, and so we were colleagues. And but we still do very similar types of labor and employment law, and each of us has tackled wage and hour issues. Just to kind of set the stage, Will, I mean, wage and hour at its core is really pretty simple. You want to give our listeners just sort of the basics of wage and hour law before we get into the classification issues?
Sure. So just real, 3,000-foot view. Wages in North Carolina are governed by the Fair Labor Standards Act and the North Carolina Wage and Hour Act. Employees, for the most part, are required to be paid at least the minimum wage, and if they are non-exempt employees, meaning they're entitled to, they don't meet one of the exemptions under the Fair Labor Standards Act, they're entitled to time and a half for any hours over 40 that they work in a single work week. That's the real basics. And then beyond that, of course, there are other requirements for whether you can actually meet one of the exemptions to get you around overtime.
Right. I mean, if people would just come to us at the get-go and say, give us a thumbnail sketch of wage and hour law, we could keep them out of trouble fairly well, couldn't we?
Pretty well, pretty well. Definitely an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, especially in this situation. And, attorneys like you and I routinely audit businesses for wage and hour compliance and provide opinions on that. So I certainly, if companies or individuals have questions about whether they're being properly classified or properly classifying, someone like you or me certainly could help them.
Amen. I mean, it really comes down to a matter of arithmetic, and but there are people out there in the marketplace who will take advantage of you if you don't watch out. And the wage and hour laws, state and federal, which are enforced by the United States Department of Labor and the North Carolina Department of Labor, wage and hour divisions are there to protect you. So. So, I guess if we were, one issue is whether you're exempt or non-exempt. Another issue is whether you're an employee or a contractor. But we could spend, a half an hour or an hour on each one of those issues. But there are other classification issues that might be of interest to our listeners. Pick one of those, Will, and just talk about it.
Sure. So certainly this time of year in the summer, we get a lot of questions about unpaid interns versus whether the intern should be paid. The safest course of action if you're an employer is to obviously go through a program that provides internships. So, in congruence with a college credit program, something like that, because typically universities have done their due diligence to create a program that would qualify for an unpaid internship. If you don't go through or if you're not engaged as a worker through one of those programs, there's a chance you should be paid. When does that work become employment? And I guess more importantly, when is it actually permissible for an employer to receive free work from a quote-unquote intern? And if I recall, and I went back and looked at one of the articles you had written previously, there's not a specific exception for quote-unquote interns under the FLSA, but there is a laundry list of things that should be considered when determining whether to pay somebody in an internship-type situation. And so would you like me to go through those?
Yeah, please do, Will.
Sure. So the first factor I saw was the internship, even though it includes actual operation of the facilities of the employer, is similar to training which would be given in an educational environment. So that harkens back to what I was saying about doing this through an educational institution or running your internship program, through a credit program through the university. For whose benefit is the internship primarily? Is it primarily for the benefit of the company, or is it primarily for the benefit of the intern? And a lot of that depends on how much is the intern really getting out of this. I mean, if you're engaging someone to come in and be a quote-unquote intern to count paper clips or lift, bales of hay, how much are they really getting out of this? Another factor that often gets looked at is, does this quote-unquote intern actually displace one of your regular employees? Do they work side by side with your existing staff doing things that your normal employees do? If so, walk like a duck, quack like a duck, they're more likely an employee than an intern that you wouldn't have to pay. And then, of course, you want to make sure that it's clear that if you're trying to establish an unpaid internship, you want to make it very clear from the outset of the relationship that there's no job at the end of this internship, in writing, the intern's not entitled to wages for the time spent in the internship, things of that nature. And so that's, I think, a good enough starting point. What else would you add to that?
Yeah, I think that is a good baseline right there, Will. It's internships can be legitimate in the public and the private sector, but if you end up answering the telephone or making copies or doing stuff that on your own that an employee would typically do, then that's not an internship, is it?
Correct.
And I think it's important. It's all or nothing. I mean, if you were a legitimate intern, they don't have to pay you anything. But what if they've crossed the line and they've turned you into an employee? What have you got a right to then?
Certainly minimum wage for any hours owed, any benefits that the company's employees otherwise are entitled to. So, I mean, if you provide benefits to other similarly situated workers who are employees, this misclassified person is going to get entitled to reimbursement for any of those benefits and whatever the value of those benefits are. Obviously, overtime, if they've worked more than 40 hours in a work week. And then, of course, if you choose to contest that this individual was misclassified, and you the company draws a hard line in the sand and says, no, they were an unpaid intern. The North Carolina Wage and Hour Act provides for the recovery of double damages and attorney's fees if the employee's counsel prevails in a lawsuit, to prove that the worker was misclassified. So there's that too.
Yeah, you raised an issue there that's ultra important to people who are in business, that if you are wrong in your classification, you not only do you have to pay the back pay, but you've got to pay, you know, twice that, the liquidated damages, plus the attorney's fees, which can really add up in these cases. So
that's right.
Yeah. So anyway, what about the situation where somebody in business or a nonprofit agency even would say to the individual, look, we want you to come in as an intern, and we want to see how you fit in and whether you've got an aptitude for this. So, in other words, there's a carrot on a stick that maybe you can get a job with this agency or this company after a successful internship. What do you think about that?
And they wouldn't be paid during this quote-unquote test period?
Right. No pay, but we're kind of holding the carrot on the stick out there that, this may work out. If you do a good job as an intern, we'll put you to work. We'll give you a paying job. What do you think about that?
Well, of course, every good lawyer is going to say it depends, but on additional facts. But I would say that generally speaking, that's not going to get you very far as the company. And more likely than not, they should be paid for that time. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. That's kind of like saying, well, we're going to give you a probationary period. You know, and we're going to give you a 90-day internship to see if you work out. That's kind of like, a 90-day probationary period. And then, you know, an employer can always hire somebody on a probationary basis. But if they're doing actual work, then, you know, you got to pay them. So that seems to be... That would be a red flag. Somebody's just trying to take advantage of you. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely a red flag.
Yeah.
The other thing worth saying is that, of course, most employees in North Carolina are at will employees unless you've got an agreement that takes you outside that relationship. And someone offering you that carrot, come on in and work for free for X period of time, if it works out, we'll hire you. Well, I mean, they can hire you on day one and fire you on day one. So you're really not, banking. I mean, you may be banking some goodwill, but you're not, there's no promised value there that's, that can't be taken away. And so it's just not typically worth it.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities to work for free, but that ain't legal.
That's right.
It's only legal if you don't pay lawyers, right? You're supposed to pay your lawyers, that's an interesting aspect of the wage and hour law. Lawyers are about the only people that you can hire and work them for free, but we don't want that secret to get out too much. So how about volunteers? There's a difference between interns and volunteers. How about the classification of volunteers?
You know, I got to be frank with you, I haven't looked into that very much.
The volunteers, for one thing, in private employment, there's no such thing as a volunteer. In other words, you got a for-profit company in the private sector, you might say to somebody, this is, you're working on the side of the angels here, so just work for free. There's no such thing in private employment. But in public employment, you can volunteer to work for free for, civic organizations and charitable organizations or humanitarian services. That's why the North Carolina Reading Service doesn't have to pay us anything for what we're doing here. We're a couple of lawyers giving our services away. But you can volunteer for charitable organizations, but not for private organizations that work for profit. Are you familiar with the Tony, Alamo Foundation versus Secretary of Labor case, Will?
I'm not. I'm sorry.
That's one of, you know, of all the cases I've come across in 42 years at the bar, that is really one of my favorite cases. And so the Tony Alamo Foundation was, you know, a legitimate charitable organization. I mean, it's 501c3 and all of that. And they did work on the side of the angels. They helped to rehabilitate addicts, you know. So they weren't the kind of organization that would go around trying to solicit money from you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry and John Q. Public. I mean, they had a swath of organizations and businesses of all kinds. I mean, it was a, you know, veritable conglomerate. And lo and behold, if you were rehabilitated, you're forever grateful for somebody helping you to clean up. They had them indoctrinated to work in these business enterprises, and they would work for free. And you know, this is
the work for food case.
Yeah, that's right. We'll work for food.
It's starting to come about.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, we'll work for food, and so I mean, they were working for food and shelter, and you know, under the circumstances, they were happy to have that kind of remuneration of sorts, you know, in kind. I mean, you get put a roof over my head and beans on the table, and mm-hmm. you know, I got some purpose in my life. And you know, a lot of them kind of put up a fight for against the Department of Labor that came in to protect them. And they were called associates. You know, they were called associates instead of employees or interns or volunteers. But that's one thing about the Department of Labor. If they get wind of something like this, they get on it, and they do enforce the law. And I think in that case, that was a huge case. I mean, there were, you know, I don't know how many quote associates close quote that didn't want to get paid. But that the Department of Labor recognized a racket when they saw it. And so they stepped in and applied the wage and hour law.
That's a case from like the 80s or the 90s. I'm trying to remember. But
1985.
It's been around. So, I mean, right. Yeah. But to your point, to your very good point, you know, once the Department of Labor gets involved, it's their case.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're an employee who says, I don't want any money, you know, my employer takes very good care of me. It's I don't want them to be, you know, punished.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up to the employee. In fact, I recently had, and I know you've had tons of these too, wage and hour audit where, you know, one of the primary closing comments from the investigator was, don't try and, you know, don't allow these folks to try and give the money back to you, Mr. Employer, whether through payroll deductions or otherwise, them stroking you a check to pay you back because they love you so much. That will not be looked on very well by the Department of Labor. So, DOL's in charge.
Yeah, that's right. And another interesting part about that Tony Alamo Foundation case was, of course, this was a charitable organization and a religious organization because, okay, we're rehabilitating the addicts, and it's you know, and but and we're religious. I mean, we're bringing religion to them,
right.
So they raise as a defense that you can't constitutionally touch us because it's free exercise of religion, and so we've got an exemption, a religious exemption, and that didn't hold up. So the religious exemptions, of course, that's another issue. I mean, that under Title VII, which one day we'll talk about that too, but that doesn't. That doesn't, the Department of Labor doesn't put a lot of truck into stuff like that when they're enforcing the wage and hour laws, and nor do plaintiff's attorneys. So anyway, we got
sure.
Yeah. So how about youth exemptions? Are you familiar with those?
Somewhat. So. Exemptions, not necessarily. I would, minor employees, those under the age of 18, can be employed, for a certain number of hours in certain specific types of positions that aren't hazardous or dangerous. They have to obviously fill out a youth employment certificate through the Department of Labor fill out a form in order to get their youth employment certificate. And beyond that, I'll defer to you.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. The feds have a youth exemption, and it's a 90-day exemption. And so that if I'm under 20, they can put me to work at a cut rate wage, hourly wage. I think it's $4.75 or something like that. And for 90 days or until I turn 20, whichever happens first, they can work me at that cut rate. But after the 90 days, and the 90 days runs from, consecutively from the day they hire you. So you can't work 45 days, go away for 45 days, and come back and still be youth exempt. It's that 90 days, or if I turn 20, then the youth exemption doesn't apply anymore. And which actually that's more of an academic thing, I think, in North Carolina, because I don't know what the new Secretary of Labor is doing with that, but the previous administration did not allow for that. But I think there is a youth exemption for seasonal children's camps, boys and girls camps, and seasonal religious and nonprofit educational centers. And in truth, this is a will work for food kind of situation, because If you're working for one of those camps and you get a roof or a tent over your head, I guess, and you get three squares, they don't have to pay you anything, I don't think. They probably can't get many people to come to work for them for that. They got to pay them something in addition to camp food and a pup tent. But that I think is about the only youth exemption that they allow for in this state anyway, which I guess is a boon for the camps and whatnot on the coast and out in the mountains and things like that. So. I mean, that could come up, I guess. But we got a couple of minutes. Will, any closing thoughts?
I would just say I think it's going to be really interesting over the next period of 6 months to a year, what happens with this labor shortage we're facing right now. And I would just encourage folks that if they are looking for employment, they have more leverage right now than they did, you know, say during the pandemic, which thankfully is hopefully coming to a close or at least being managed well. It's been shocking to me, and I'm sure you've encountered it too, how many of our clients have lamented that they just cannot get enough people to work with them. And many of them are offering cash bonuses, sign-on bonuses, you know, extremely high levels of pay for the job. And so I would just suggest that if people do wish to seek employment, now's a good time.
Yeah, that's a good point, Will. You know, times being what they are, if it's a unpaid internship or it's a volunteer situation or something like that, you've probably got the leverage on the labor side to say, I got to get paid for my time. And,
that's right.
I think this is, you're right. I mean, the situation has changed. So, Will, I want to thank you for being our guest, and it's been great having you on the air again. And we want you to come back and be our guest again. And thank you very much.
Oh, that's mighty kind. You know, I always love speaking with you, Joe, and I will see you up in Raleigh next month.
Fabulous, fabulous. I look forward to it. Well, to our listeners, we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. So please be sure to tune in next time. We broadcast the program on the fourth Tuesday of every month at 2 p.m., and we rebroadcast the following Wednesday at 7 a.m. We hope you've enjoyed the show and that you've learned some things about your legal rights and, not necessarily about equal access, but about not getting taken advantage of in the marketplace, which can certainly happen. And I'm Joe Austin, your host for the North Carolina Reading Service. And the content of this program is for people who are print and visually impaired. After it's broadcast, you can find it as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. That's www.ncreadingservice.org, where you'll be able to listen to it again and share it with others. If you have any comments or questions about today's episode or wish to share a topic that you want us to explore, that's important. If you've got a topic that you would like for us to cover on Legal Matters, we would love to hear from you because we aim to please. So please call us at 919-832-5138. And you can reach us also via email at info@ncreadingservice.org. Thank you, Will. Thank you to our listeners. We look forward to coming back to you next month. Thanks so much.